So in these morning sessions, we're going to explore ways that we can bring our practice into different areas and with different attitudes and atmospheres. And so many times the first part is going to be exploring the ideas behind this, and then the second part really bringing that into practice. So for this kind of listening, just seeing what's most helpful for you. It might be already to have the eyes closed and be in your meditation posture. It may be more helpful for you to have your eyes open and be in a more easeful posture. Just finding out for yourself. So, just first of all, just a couple of key points is that as we hear the practice instructions, practice suggestions, can we hear them in that atmosphere of playfulness, that we're going to be playing with experience? So we don't need to understand everything, just enough to have a sense of how to go forwards. And with that, also this sense of patience. So we may find that we're only making very small differences to our experience in the way that we play. And we may also experience sudden leaps, sudden big changes. But certainly it's going to be an experience which really benefits from a lot of patience. And we can feel that as one of the ways that we practice metta. It's practicing patience towards our own human experience. One of the key ways we can practice metta is also in relationship to our body. So in relationship to our posture. So with metta meditation, much of the time it's really helpful that the posture is reasonably comfortable. Reasonably upright. Reasonably open. So we'll have noticed over the days that the mind and heart can wander off to different places, wander off to different times, leaving the body behind here. So there's real support can be offered by making the body a comfortable place for heart and mind to rest into. So many of you have a lot of meditation retreat experience. Just a few more pointers so that we really get the body receptive. Just checking that the posture is stable. We have three points of contact, either the two knees or the two feet, and the third usually is the buttocks. We just check with the balance of weight between these areas, whether we're leaning forwards or leaning backwards or to either side. Just explore finding that sweet spot of upright and open. really support openness and stability if the knees are lower than the hips. So there's that kind of forward motion, it also opens out the belly and the belly can relax a little bit more. So finding for yourself what's helpful. And if it really feels like a struggle, you know, getting into a chair or finding some other way to be here in stillness for longer and longer periods of time. It'd be helpful to also stretch the body at other times. And also worth just looking at the posture that it's not cutting off the bloodstream. Sometimes mean propping up the ankles a little so that they're not bending sharply, so the legs quite flowing. Where you place the hands so that you support the uprightness. Are the hands like an anchor pulling you down, pulling you forwards? Or are they a support, keeping you upright? So if you feel it would be helpful to explore posture a little more, after we finish with this session in the hall, I'll stay on and we can speak and share a little bit more about getting comfortable in meditation. But for now, just aiming for as much comfort, as much ease in the body as you can manage. And if you need to move, just keeping that mindful, loving awareness through the movement. It's all part of the meditation, all part of the cultivation of metta, of presence. In the realm of metta, we're all welcome to be here as we find ourselves. So as long as you can be here in the first 5 minutes, you're really welcome to come and to stay, and stay till the end. If you suddenly find yourself needing to cough, you can stay and cough, that's really fine. All you're really doing is thankfully pulling us back out of our daydreams. Or maybe you're also giving us a person we can feel kindness towards. There's no need to leave. You can just be that helpful mindfulness bell calling us back. In the realm of cultivating metta, there's really no disturbance. I want to speak about two ways of practicing metta. And of course there could be many more. But we could say there's a way of practicing metta where metta is in the foreground. It's the object of our attention. Like we were doing yesterday, there was a friendly, kind person imagine, and the phrases and the feelings, all very much in the foreground, what we were paying attention to. And there's also this other way of practicing metta, which is more what we're going to do this morning, where the metta is not just in the background, but actually everywhere. It's not so much the object, there will be different objects, but the attitude, the atmosphere is one of metta, the relationship. So in this way, metta has coloured awareness, coloured the knowing of experience. Metta's flavoured the way of looking, flavoured our perception, what we notice, how we notice. So this practice isn't going to involve the phrases, and if you prefer that practice, you can feel free to do that. And there's also an open invitation for you to do whatever practices you already know are working well for you, feel helpful for you. But equally, there's also an encouragement to try out new ways. So metta is this feeling of friendliness towards all things. Metta begins on the scale or on the spectrum, on the range, from non-hatred, non-rejection. Metta is not selfish, not exclusive. It's an atmosphere of care and concern for all things, not just ourselves. In this way, it's expansive. This way it wishes for, and it also begins to bring a sense of ease and safety to all of us. And we may or may not perceive it this way. It generally feels beneficial and wholesome. To the giver and the receiver. Right now we can guide our attention to the breath. And wherever we guide attention, this knowing quality, this awareness quality reveals what is in attention, reveals the breath. And more so, we can pay attention with more of an intention of metta, an intention of bringing our attention to this phenomena with kindness, with welcoming, with openness. So with the practice, as with all practice, we're increasing the connection with awareness, with what we are aware of. This is quite radical, quite transformative, to notice what we notice. So we can notice the mind that's wandering, or that has wandered. For in the moment when we notice, we're actually back in the present moment. So we can just notice, I'm back. And as we notice it, can we bring more of this welcoming attitude? So rather than going down the habitual route of making a story about how I'm no good at meditation, I'm always distracted. This moment here, you're not distracted. So the first radical step is becoming more aware. And whatever we're aware of, bringing in more kindness, which is also a really radical step. Bringing in gratitude and appreciation. And then the next radical step is we can direct attention. So we can choose what we attend to. We might choose to attend to the breath. And as we do so, we can also choose to include more metta into the breath. That can be metta in the way that we meet the breath, really inviting the breath into the body, We may in fact attune to how the breath is kind to the body. The breath is good for us. We might wish to invite the breath to come deeper into the body. Inviting the breath to take up as much space as it needs. So this is where the patience is necessary, that we notice again, we've wandered off again. But right now we're aware of that. We can kindly relax the body. So that we have a feeling of comfort in the body, a little bit more comfort in the body. So we're aware that we're aware. And then with kindness we can invite the breath into awareness. Finding where it's easy to connect with the breath. And just in that place, just inviting the breath to take up more space. If it wishes to. Seeing, is there ways to be more sensitive with the breath, sensitive to the sensations, but also sensitive that we quite soon notice when we've wandered off away from the object of the meditation. So that object could be the breath, could be the body, could be some form of metta. can we soon notice when we've wandered off? One of the ways that we need to support that is not punishing ourselves when we find that we've wandered off. It's all quite playful, quite gentle. There might be a temptation to stay in the distraction, imagining that it's more enjoyable than being with the breath. So it's quite important that we generate a feeling of well-being, beginning with relaxing the body once again. Any areas of tension, maybe we're leaning really too far forward now, or too far back. Stabilizing again. You can also notice that paying attention to our experience is also an act of kindness. We all love to be in friendly attention. When we talk with friends, it's also body sensations. Could love to be in friendly attention. So simply noticing, where does it feel like you are right now? Do you feel like you're in the body, outside of the body? So with the next in-breath, just really grounding into the body. Maybe bringing the awareness with the attention on this in-breath into the body. Almost like a surfer or a skier riding the breath into the being, into the body. Rest within and allowing the breath to flow back out. Feel how the breath is bringing body, heart and mind all together. You may notice that the breath holds the attention when there's movement. And maybe attention would slip away into a distraction of thoughts when the breath is all the way in or all the way out. So we can just increase the intention to pay attention when the breath is all the way out as we wait for the next in-breath. Then we soften the intention as the in-breath flows in. Maybe increase the intention, the interest. And then when the breath is flowing back out again. In this way we can adjust the quality of intention, quality of interest. And see if we can be with three full breaths. With maximum kindness. So again, just checking that all the body and the face are relaxed. See if we can be with another three breaths and really just kindness and enjoying. If there's anything to enjoy there. So here we're paying attention to our perception of the breath, which isn't exactly the same thing as the breath. So if you wish to, you can play with this a little bit. You could play with imagining the breath coming more and more into the body, even into places where breath wouldn't normally come, deeper into the belly, into the hips, the upper back. Still using the same rhythm of the breath, inviting it to be long, inviting it to come to other areas, not forcing. So if you're trying this out, just notice how it feels to breathe in this way. Of course, at some point the mind will wander, will get distracted. Can we also cultivate the attitude of metta here? It's okay. It's the creative mind. Wonderful thing. So we become aware with kindness of what's going on. We also don't take a side, we don't judge ourselves. We can choose where to guide attention, as we've just been doing. Guide it through the body to relax. Guide it to meet the breath. Guide it to invite the breath into new areas. New ways, and all with this atmosphere of metta, welcoming, allowing, opening. So as well as the mind getting distracted at times, we may also notice that the breath gets back to a habitual rhythm or space. that's fine. But if it felt more comfortable, more enlivening to have a fuller breath, deeper breath, might wish to invite that. There may be no limit to the playfulness we can explore. Maybe the breath takes up more space even than the body appears to take. So that the breath is actually even around the body. So if you find yourself connected in a helpful way, even when I ring the bell, you can just let that sustain through opening your eyes, through changing your posture. So sometimes it's helpful to have some time for questions. Maybe that made a lot of sense. Maybe there were some parts of it that didn't make a lot of sense. Or maybe there's some other things we can approach. To allow for those who want to stay in silence more, I just say a little bit about the walking practice, how metta and walking practice can come together. And then if you wish to leave, then that's fine, and we'll have some questions in the hall. And if you want to stay even longer than that, we can say a little bit more about posture for anyone who that feels helpful. And, you know, if you feel fine with your walking practice already, you can also just go ahead with that. So we could say that there are also two key ways we can do walking practice with more metta. And one would be we can actually use the phrases like we did in last night's session and like many of you will be familiar with. Even, you know, towards, we may even be imagining someone or something. Or it could be towards that which we meet and we pass. You know, may you be well, may you be happy. And that would be one of the primary focuses for walking metta practice. Another one would be that the metta is just more kind of subtle. more in the background, more in the attitude, the everything that we meet, including the body sensations. So with walking practice, much of the time we're mainly focused on that contact of the feet touching the earth, that feeling of body moving. And this is a wonderful balance with the stillness practices, where we're really kind of investigating in stillness what's going on in the human experience. And then what happens when we start to move the body, when we start to open the eyes? Can we maintain that same atmosphere, that same attitude through different postures, through different senses, being more sensitive in that way? So we could say it's kind of obvious metta, where metta is in the realm of the phrases, it's in the realm of holding an object which we're purposefully sending it towards. Or it could be just in that attitude, just in that atmosphere like we were exploring here, which I think is a little bit more subtle. Maybe it's a little bit more difficult to get exactly a sense for. But just kind of exploring that. It's kind of flavored awareness, flavored relationship. So that feeling towards perhaps the feet touching the earth. Can we welcome that sensation to come in? And can we also welcome the feet onto the earth in both those sides of that welcoming attitude? And as the movement is also something which supports us for the stillness practices, you know, how do you want to move your body? How do you want to walk? You know, sometimes our walking meditation can get quite rigid. You know, does it need a little bit more from the hips, a little bit more fluidity, a little bit more dance-like quality, so that it helps us to stay connected? So finding for yourself, making this practice your own, you know, and doing it in whatever way really kind of works for you, as long as it's not going to be a great disturbance to other people, you know, who want to do their practice their way, you know. So we won't go full dancing mode, you know, but just you may want to kind of play with that so that there's interest, there's creativity, it's not too rigid, it's not too dry. It has that metta feeling of juiciness. And, you know, it's something else that we can drop in there is paying attention to what's already fine here, what's already beautiful maybe. You know, we might stop in front of a plant and just let it absorb our attention, you know, and let it receive our metta. You know, it's a wonderful thing. These little beautiful nature forms, these trees, or maybe, you know, contemplate who made this path. You can just feel that actually, what does that bring forth? And it's something we can explore through the day at the meal times. You know, keep exploring how we can bring metta into more and more of our practice. Okay, I think that's maybe that's okay. So, are there any questions at this point that would be helpful to clarify? Yeah.
I find it quite tricky, this settle metta with all the phrases.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that I understand the differences between regular sitting, because this is kind of the attitude that anyway, I think, that is coming towards anything that rises up.
Mm.
So I'm trying to figure out what's the difference.
Yeah, I think
settle attitude and regular meditation.
Yeah, I think ultimately there isn't a difference, really. Okay. You know, the difference is kind of that we're really paying attention to that and making sure that that's always there. Because in the regular thing is we can kind of get a little bit towards a preference, right? And we get meditation is associated with not being distracted, you know, or not thinking those thoughts about the you know. And so it kind of becomes competitive. It's like, that wasn't the meditation, now I come back. And if you come back, it's not a meditation. And it's like, so actually that is creating this non-meta relationship. So I'm distracted. Oh, okay, of course I'm distracted. Yeah, I have a mind. Minds get distracted. But then in that moment, it's like, yeah, that's okay. But I can also breathe. So there can actually even be a different thing, is that we don't even need to get rid of a distracted mind, but can we breathe with it, actually? And as I was saying last night in the thing, it's like, if we breathe in a way that we're having a good meditation, do we then start to have a good meditation? Because that breath was one of those ways that we kind of know that. It's like, oh, it actually brings the clarity of mind. And so I don't need to get rid of anything. I can almost welcome it. It's like, oh, good, good. That's good. I don't get lost in it, and I don't reject it. It's that middle way of, that the kind of metta offers. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Hi.
I get a lot of distractions during walking,
mm-hmm.
and I find it sometimes difficult to pay attention to the feet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I wonder, like, what's the mental attitude for this?
Yeah. So when you say distracted, do you mean distracted by things or by thoughts and emotions?
By thoughts and by unpleasant sensations in the body.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so both of those things really actually are well met by metta. So the apparently unpleasant sensations in the body that turn up, sometimes they're getting quite a lot of rejection, and that's part of what makes them feel more kind of unpleasant at certain times. So we might want to check in, like, why they feel like that. Is there something that we're not doing quite right? Is there a way that we could walk that would be kind of more supportive of them? And in a way, with the metta practice, the very concept of distractions starts to kind of change in terms of it's how we meet those things, which then actually become like an object for the theme of metta to meet. So there's a real kind of caring for the body, a real kind of caring for the mind in that way. But sure, you know, if we decide to place our attention somewhere, we're going to find it going to other places. You know, that's for sure going to happen. So yeah, there will be these distractions.
So after the distraction ceases, do you just go back to the feet?
Yeah. Yeah. So the kind of the core reason why we, let's say one of the good reasons why we have an object in the meditation, so like the breath or the image of a friend that we're going to be sending metta to or whoever it is so that we notice when we're not doing that. And what becomes interesting is like, well, where did it go? Mm-hmm. We don't need to figure out why and, you know, what does this say about me? And that wouldn't be so helpful. But like, oh, it went there. And then I come back. And if it keeps going to somewhere, then there might be some worth in kind of paying some attention to that at some time. But like, yeah, so whenever we've met that distraction and given it like, oh, okay, yeah, and then we come back. So we're training in coming back. And, you know, sometimes they give this lovely image of like training a puppy or something. And we need to kind of treat our minds like a little puppy. You know, it goes and it chews up the cushion that we're sitting on, you know, it's like, okay, you know, don't do that. But if we train puppies by hitting them when they do something wrong, then they just feel very, very confused. You know, whereas if we guide it back towards something and give it a comfortable body, give it a comfortable breath, then, you know, the mind can relax in that way and feel a little bit more attuned to paying attention to that object. And so the objects are not randomly chosen also. You know, there's something in them that we can find and we can explore. Yeah. Thanks. Yes.
So all these instructions are really working with the attention, like directing the attention to be such that the experience will be, like, as you referenced, as you said last time, colors, the experiences, the attention,
mm-hmm.
it kind of directing us how to work with the attention.
Yes, we could say in the beginning what we want to develop is a skill for being able to choose where we place attention. So many times attention goes to that which it's kind of a hidden intention. There must be an intention there somewhere, but it's kind of hidden to us of like, oh, I'll pay attention to that, or oh, I'll pay attention to that. And we're kind of jumping around like a butterfly, floating around like a butterfly a little bit. And then what would be the skill of being able to kind of choose the flower we're going to land on more purposefully? Yeah. So yeah, we're definitely kind of training that quality. And also bringing in this additional thing, this atmosphere of metta. Yeah. Good, okay. Yeah.
Can you repeat that in phrases?
Yeah, sure. So kind of classical metta phrases would be something like, because all beings wish to be happy, I can see how myself, I wish to be happy, then, you know, may you be happy. We can feel how, you know, being sick doesn't feel as welcomed in general for the human being as being sick. So may I be well, may you be well. That feeling of safety, so that we can really relax and open. So may you be safe. So may you be happy, may you be well, may you be safe. And then I like this kind of fourth one because it covers everything else. So let's say you couldn't get happy. You know, you couldn't get well, and you couldn't be safe. Then may you live with ease. So living with ease still remains an option, even when everything else isn't going well. So may you be happy, may you be well, may you be safe, may you live with ease. Yeah. Those are the ones I use. But, you know, find your own ones, and maybe we can... You know, maybe there's already nicely written out ones in Hebrew that we can put up on the board for people to use, or maybe when Zar guides it this afternoon, then, you know, it'll be in Hebrew, I think so. We'll get it that way. Thanks. Yes?
Yeah, about the distraction again.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm able to guide myself into metta with distraction, that's usually with words.
Mm.
I tell myself like good things about the distraction, or that it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if maybe there's other I want to say tactics,
mm-hmm.
to guide myself with less words into being okay with distractions.
Yeah. So, it could just be something that gives that feeling of the okayness, that, you know, distractions happen. So it can just be you're welcome, you know, rather than
words.
Yeah, you know, just that feeling of like, ah, welcome. But also, I'm going to come back to the breath, you know, like, oh, okay, this too. But I'm going to come back to the breath. So we're not kind of encouraging the distraction, but we're also not pushing it away. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes, it's still, I think, it still has work. When you're saying welcome, greeting towards the distraction, it's still very verbal to me.
Oh, okay. Non-verbal.
Maybe I'll just try it a bit and see. And
yeah.
If I still don't, I'll come back again.
Yeah, yeah. So you were thinking something not a phrase,
yes.
Rather. Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good idea also. Yeah, definitely. So that feeling of like, and then, you know, so like just like that atmosphere that it's like, ah. Yeah, I'm coming back. It's difficult for me to give
yes.
to say something that's not a phrase. But yeah, you know, that we create that atmosphere that it's not oh no, but oh yeah, and then we kind of move on from there. Yeah. Hi.
Regarding the last question, because I'm also using a lot of speaking to myself sometimes.
Okay. Yeah.
Is there any problem with sentence, I mean, with directing our attention?
Well, There would be if we were, you know, kind of having a concept that a good meditation has no thinking in it, you know, because obviously the verbal atmosphere within us would be like that. But I don't think that's really kind of what we're going for. So it's more a question of changing the inner atmosphere, the inner voices, towards more beneficial ones. And then ultimately, once it's all quite well stabilized inside, then things start to kind of quieten down naturally. So I think it's quite helpful to just make sure that the inner voices are having more and more of a kind of a metta quality at this time. So I don't think we need to worry about, you know.
So it's not problematic.
I think it takes care of itself, you know. Like it will, you know, if we weren't paying attention to the inner atmosphere and we just kept thinking, I'm going to keep saying this phrase, and we don't notice if things have actually quietened down. So it kind of, if we have this sensitivity, so let's say it's like this. So say we're basically paying attention to the breath, you know, this is kind of we've been easy to go, and then we get distracted. And then we notice that when we're getting distracted, we have an instinct to kind of say something harsh towards ourselves or towards the distraction, and we make a big deal about it. But actually we catch that and we change and we say, oh no, it's fine. And I'll come back to the breath. Right? Then we notice we're doing it that way. If we're kind of going on and on with like a verbal thing, and actually what's happening inside is more and more peacefulness, more and more quietness, more and more subtleness, and something kind of beyond the verbal, beyond the language, then there's no need to be bringing in the phrases. Like the practice is actually flowing along that way.
I can give the example of training puppies.
Yeah.
So it seems very reasonable to me, like, to talk to the puppy and say, like, oh, it doesn't understand, but still we have this tendency, so it's kind of the same.
It's kind of the same, yeah. It really kind of depends what's going on in the kind of puppy mind at that point, you know. So, like, if the puppy is kind of very calm and very peaceful, and we actually quite like that, it wouldn't make sense to kind of go up and then be kind of offering phrases to the restful, peaceful puppy necessarily, because are we adding something to the puppy that the puppy needs in that moment? So it's kind of like letting the puppy be and be peaceful, be at ease, be all of that, and not adding something in. So that was kind of the puppy state I was referring to. And when the puppy state is already kind of like, it looks a bit anxious, or it's kind of something's going on, you know, in the mind. And then we actually then can kind of bring in very obvious meta-flavored phrases and things like that. A few more. Let's go here first.
So the metta exercise with the emptiness, it assumes that things can be changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We can carry a different land, we can transform the way we experience things. And I wonder if it has any danger. Because with this idea of transformation can come also a lot of expectations and maybe also a lot of faking. Just wonder if what you think about it.
Yeah. Okay, so the danger of metta, particularly in terms of expectations and of faking an experience and then kind of falling for that faked experience. So, we have to watch out for expectations, and we also have to watch out for how we can kind of use metta and other types of meditation as a way of escaping from things that need our attention. You know, so many of the distractions that we have going on in our minds are actually just kind of like a, just a blah 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 kind of thing. It doesn't actually mean anything. It's just the mind, you know, used to having something to offer and finding itself, oh, actually we're not planning anything now, we're not going anywhere. So the mind just kind of has a little bit of momentum going on. And sometimes there's real issues that need a bit of attention, and over time we'll see which are those. So it still feels to me that ultimately a quality of welcoming, a quality of opening, a quality of getting close to would be the most appropriate relationship. And so it doesn't particularly feel to me like escaping. That's not the way it feels to me. And it actually feels possible for the experience to unfold the way it will. But as you rightly say, we are having an influence on what arises, how long it arises, and in what way it arises, by having this kind of metta attitude. So we are changing the experience. But even within that, I wouldn't necessarily say it was more or less fake than anything else, because, you know, everything is kind of created. So I don't think there are kind of real moods and not real moods. You know, it could, like, we could all secretly decide to make you feel a certain way, you know, by the way we kind of, like, suddenly you feel like you're treated differently, and then that generates a mood, and then is that a real mood? Or is that not a real mood because, okay, everyone did it on purpose? But why does anyone do anything on purpose? We start to kind of get into difficult qualities, because we're social animals, which are kind of trained to act in social ways, in community ways. And, you know, even on this retreat, it's a very fabricated experience, a made-up experience. So it's kind of difficult to define exactly what wouldn't be faking it, for me. Does that make some sense? And
it's a lot of just transformation part. Sorry.
Yeah.
Any other retreat it was always about like curiosity about like what's happening right now.
Yeah.
And here we like take the step forward and we're like, let's change it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do something with it. Let's take it as a raw material. So what should we do when it's not working? Like, not always you'll be able to connect to those meta mindset. And sometimes you will be just thinking about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come across such a situation, how do you approach it?
Well, okay, that's a great question, I think. And so I don't know if I always do the same thing. But as I was saying, if I kind of relate it to things I was saying in just this morning session. So the first thing that's radically different is if I notice that I'm, you know, having any kind of experience, then that's already radical, right? Because I'm aware of having that experience. And what's radical about that is that I'm now not in that experience in the same way. So before I was in it, right? And I was everything about it, and I've got to get out of this, and or I've got to do that. You know, we're in that kind of mode. And then we can step out of that by attuning to the awareness which is revealing this experience. So it's less personal in that way. So, whoa, look what's going on here in the body, in the mind, in the heart. So that's already kind of a change of atmosphere. And from there, this whole thing actually starts to change. The experience which I'm now more observing starts to change, because there's actually a bit more space. And the thing that's usually lacking in let's say more difficult experiences is that lack of space. And we emphasize it with the lack of body space, and we also kind of emphasize it through the way that we think. We think like, I don't know what, you know, I'll try anything now to get out of this state. And then from this one, it actually already has this kind of metta quality. You know, someone was saying, why are you calling this a subtle metta practice? This is the same as what we always do. And so actually, that's really true. So on these other retreats, where you're paying attention to things how they are, you are always generating a bit more space. And a bit more space always allows in a bit more metta. Right? It lets in a bit more kindness. And that changes the experience. So all we're kind of saying is, even on these other retreats, you were changing your experience. But we're just being more explicit about it, and it's to encourage more playfulness with changing experience in positive ways. So that's what I feel to say at the moment. Yeah. Thank you. Yes?
In the practice of metta with phrases, mostly I heard instructions that the first object should be yourself, and only then you move to other people. So why do we start with other people here, or is it?
Well, I think the reason why I decided to start with someone or something that we feel, you know, this kind of friendly connection with, is so that we really get a good sense of that atmosphere. So that we really get a good sense of what the feeling is of wishing well to something else. When we feel it towards ourselves, it then actually starts, and this is why it's really, really helpful to offer it to oneself, is that actually we realize, I'm not very good at this. I'm not very good at offering full welcome, warmth, really wishing myself happy. Oh, come on, I don't deserve it. You know, you kind of come back in this way that we don't towards the friendly person. You know, we say, oh, I hope you really get happy, you know. And sometimes, you know, that can really like go a long way to actually reveal to us what metta's potential is, you know, that you know, we can offer something with no expectation of getting anything back in return. We just want them to be happy. And it gets very clean in that way. But it's really, really helpful, and we will be coming around to offering metta to ourselves. But I wanted it to be kind of...
just to get the sense of the potential feeling.
Yeah, and the potential. And the potential. Because I think we can feel that way towards ourselves as well. But it's a little bit more tricky.
Like for me, it's more easy to wish for myself than for others.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, it's and that's great. It's great to see, and you know, and that's really, really supportive, because basically this wish for another being's happiness is coming from you. Mm-hmm. So the more freed up you are, the more free you are to also offer it outwards. Yeah, that's great. Yes.
I have a question. They're taking the fake idea. Sometimes I really suffer in the meditation. I want to move, I want to go, I want to do something. It's not, I don't enjoy it, I don't get in. And then I have four sentences they say to myself.
Mm.
And it's kind of fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
And after a while, I say it like a mantra. And after a while, really
deep,
solid and free and deep, and go, and I really feel, and it's kind of like you said before, anyway, these thoughts that are running in our minds, what's going on?
It's
not faked, or so I kind of guide the happy work.
Yeah, lovely.
In the beginning, it's like a mantra, like it's words.
Yeah.
And then I do it. And sometimes I go for a long time with these four sentences. It sinks down.
Yeah, yeah. That's great.
I wonder what does it do actually? How do you see that?
Yeah, I don't know exactly. Yeah, yes. Well, something that's kind of happening in our experience that is exactly sounds like what you're describing is that our mind is trying to fix the experience. And so it's not necessarily tuned in with doing meditation, or it's not necessarily tuned in with doing retreats. So it kind of offers various things. It's like, oh, we could do this. Or maybe you should do that, maybe you should do that. And then we notice, actually, you know, mind, you're actually creating the agitation, right? So the agitation experience is mostly from the mind, right? Because what you can see is that if you don't follow that, you actually end up in somewhere that's more relaxed, right? And so this is like the core of the Buddha's teachings, is that we have the sense that it's getting and getting rid of things that bring us to ease. But it actually turns out it's getting rid of, or it's just letting go of that attitude, I need to get something or get rid of something for ease. And that ease then just comes into being when the mind that's demanding for things to be otherwise quietens down. Right? And so it just takes a little bit of sustaining, as you say, in some skillful use of phrases or attitude and whatever, and then we kind of just drop into something. It's like, oh, I can actually be here. I actually do feel at ease in my body, and everything starts to kind of generate in that way. So, yeah, that's basically what you're describing is the kind of the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism in a nutshell of how to approach meditation. Yeah. Okay. Yes?
Often the instructions, the instructing thoughts are sitting with
Mm-hmm.
All walks of life, clothes. Does it make sense to let them as they come up? Like, instead of just, okay, I've noticed the fourth time, come back to the. Then actually, I'll actually do that.
Yeah, I think that basically, why not? Why not send metta to distractions, you know, and distractive thoughts? Even to the people in the thoughts. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that can be a practice you can do as well. I mean, it all kind of depends on the stability of the mind that's doing it. Yes, because if there isn't that real kind of feeling of stability and deepening, and we're leaping to there, and then we're leaping to there, and we're leaping to there, it's kind of encouraging the mind in a way to keep coming up with distractive thoughts. So it's that balance between the thing. But if we already feel very, very stable, you know, and then like, ah, there's a distractive thought. Ah, and it includes that person. Let's bring that person in with a real sense of stability into the heart space and kind of rest with them, breathe with them for a moment so that they're here, and then we'll offer them some phrases. And then when that feels like, okay, I'm going to stop this now. So it's quite intentional, yeah? And now I'm going to let go of that person and I'm going to come to something else or whatever it is. So that we're not kind of participating in like, oh, mind, can you come up with another one? And, you know, so that it's not in that way, but we're actually very connected, very rooted in. But yeah, it's a great, great way of finding them.
The reason it happens, those thoughts are reoccurring. Over and over for years, right?
Yeah.
For
years. And okay,
you don't
friendly
with them. Then when you kind of
dismantle
them,
by
mentor the people in
the force, they listen to the group. Yeah. That's great. That's lovely. Yeah. Thank you. Good. Okay. Maybe we'll just take two more so that there's time. I think people will be coming back in a minute. So, yeah.
Have you examined your posture?
Mm-hmm.
How do you know? After a while, I won't be very comfortable in any position.
Okay.
So how do I know if it's okay, this is how it should be?
Okay. Yep. That's great. So let's move on to posture. Was your question about something else?
Yeah. Should I ask it now?
Yeah. So you ask it that now and then move.
About when I welcome a distraction and I want to give it a bit of attention, I always, one of the thoughts I have is how much attention should I give to this distraction and then come back to whatever anchor I had before.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, so there's kind of two quantities with attention. one we could say is that kind of in the moment, how much attention that gets. We might, you know, if we were with the breath or with an image or something like that, we might stay somewhat with that and just kind of view it almost from afar. It's like, oh, okay, you were coming. That's fine. You're welcome. And it might also be a question of time, like how much time we're going to spend with that. So in terms of time, it's quite a short period of time. Yeah. So it's like we notice it, we acknowledge it, and we say, you know, I'm coming back to the breath. You feel free. Stay or go. You know, in that kind of way. So that's what I use for myself. And you'll feel for yourself what's kind of what feels appropriate or what feels a bit cold, you know, like not very much with the metta. Yeah. It's definitely a playful area.
It drags you in.
Yeah.
Like over, so you still say to it, like, okay, you just do whatever you do and I'm going to leave the breath, or?
So in terms of being dragged in, I mean, when you're dragged in, that's it. It's over, you know, until you pop out. And then once you've popped out, come to the knowing of that experience. So we're kind of talking about knowing a distraction, right? So that's already a different kind of mode, that you actually, okay, I'm knowing this distraction. So we're already in the space, and from there the kind of metta can flow and the choice to come back to the breath. When we're in a distraction, I think there's just nothing we can do until, you know, it releases.
If you're still with the breath and it just keeps like calling you, so that's where like there's a play in it.
Yeah.
There's probably no definite answer for it.
Yeah, I think, you know, to be sure where you want to be, you know, and to be sure that this isn't going to lead to my welfare and happiness, and this isn't going to lead to the welfare and happiness of other people following this distraction. So we're quite clear about it, that I'm not tempted to go along with this, but I'm also not rejecting it, you know. And then it kind of, it quietens down in the volume in that way. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so anyone who wants to talk a bit about posture, getting comfortable in posture, we'll move over to that for about, let's say about 10 minutes, and then we'll see. Is that okay? So, yeah. So getting comfortable for longer periods in a posture and not wanting to move so much. So the essential thing is that we actually begin off in a posture which is feels quite stable, feels quite well balanced for us. And... you know, that can really be anything. Like after some period of time, I decided actually the chair for me is the best posture, and so, you know, now I sit in a chair. Generally, things that are really helpful is that it has a slope. Whatever you're sitting on kind of has a slope. So you can see Zara's cushion there has a slope, and I just borrowed from her a shawl which I put underneath there, so that when I put this on here, I've now got a slope moving me forwards, and that opens the hips, and once the hips open, then the back becomes more straight and the belly becomes more soft. And like you're doing, you know, with the hands like this, I like that as well, that also brings the shoulders up and the whole thing starts to support. When we start thinking in a certain way, which is the thinking that you know, I want the bell to ring or I'm getting pulled into a train of thoughts, we actually tend to lean forwards like this. And so that also kind of alerts me, is like, if I find myself over here, I think, whoa, yeah, really in a lot of thinking. So there's all of that, and then basically we're looking for, you know, quite upright type of feeling and quite open type of feeling. With sitting on the ground level, then it actually involves quite a lot of different things, because a lot more can kind of, let's say, go wrong in cross-legged sitting on the floor posture. But a lot of people absolutely love it and, you know, wouldn't meditate any other way. But it does mean that... it's 11:15, is this? Yeah. So I'll just say a bit more about posture and let this recording end.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.